All right, guys, welcome to the show. It's episode 75 of Deborah Gets Red Pilled. I've been away for a while, but I'm back. Sorry about that little hiatus, but I had to clear my mind after the last few episodes, and I've been really busy with work and just thinking stuff over, and it's good to be back. This week, it's just going to be me. I think this is the first time that I'm ever going to attempt to do a solo episode, and we'll see how it goes. No real topics for this one, but I just got some pretty exciting show news I want to tease out there, and I just want to go over everything that's been going on after the last episode, because that one was pretty heavy and gotten a ton of feedback on it. We got a ton of downloads on it, and you know, it just that one was a transformative episode for the show. Kind of shocked me back into the reality of everything that I've set out to do on this show, and got me thinking about new stuff and where the show needs to go. So we'll get into that in a minute, but I just want to do a little bit of news before we get going. Guys, the emails have been awesome. Messages in every form. I've got them on Twitter, email, got a bunch of Instagram messages. And I know in the past I've said I'll give a response to every email. We got so many for this show that I couldn't keep up. And so if I didn't send you back an email, I apologize. And if I sent you a real brief one, it's just because, you know, I'm kind of at a loss for how I want to explain the interaction that Deborah and Emily and I had on episode 75. Just depends on the time of day, how I feel about what happened. And you know, we got emails with people, from people who are angry, from people who are sad, from people who are happy. And I got emails from people telling me they're done listening to the show, people telling me that we need to end the show. And I got emails from people telling me that it was a beautiful piece of art, and people that I trust that said it was one of the best podcasts they'd ever listened to in their life. And as long as I'm putting out content that gets an emotional response out of people, I'm going to keep going. Show's not going to end. And so I hope nobody was worried about that. But it's 2 weeks on, and I still think about that show pretty much every day, multiple times a day, and still go through the same roller coaster of emotions of, you know, everything that I just said, anger and sadness and just frustration and just what the fuck. Like, that's how I feel most of the time when I think back on it. I definitely made a mistake thinking that Deborah was farther along down the road, at least to seeing the bigger picture and taking everything that's happening into account and looking at it through a broader lens. And I don't think that's the case yet. So that being said, let's get some news out of the way. So yeah, guys, keep sending those emails. I really appreciate all of them. And hopefully if I didn't send you something back, you'll send me another one, and maybe we'll get to talk. I really, really appreciate them. And I read them all. I read every single one of them. And I get really excited when I see there's, I get a notification on my other email that I have messages in the Deborah Gets Red Pilled email. And it makes me excited to go read those. Guys, I finally got the Telegram group up and running. I had created a channel before. So on Telegram, you can create either a channel or a group. And I thought I was supposed to do a channel. And if you do a channel, that means that me as the administrator or whatever of the channel, I have to post things and then people can respond to them, but people can't post anything themselves. I didn't want that. So I deleted that one. And so if you are a member of that and it says that I blocked you, that's why I didn't block you. I just started a new one and I started a group so everybody can post. And what I want out of that, guys, people are in there posting all the time. It's good. We've got probably about 20 people in there now, I think. And we're getting some really good stuff. People interacting with each other and creating a little community. I want to keep it solutionary in there, guys. I don't want people posting a whole bunch of just articles about COVID and Fauci. And we all know that stuff. We all know what's going on. We don't really know what's going on. We all know that it's something weird's going on, but I'd rather keep it solutionary in there. People are posting pictures of their harvest out of their garden and stuff. That's what I want to see. I want to inspire people to start doing stuff for themselves, getting ready for what's coming. And just talking with each other, maybe making connections with people, and hopefully maybe people in the same area that didn't even know that they were there can meet up in there, and we can do some DGRP meetups or something like that, like kind of like what No Agenda does on a really, really small scale. But so get in there, download the Telegram app, and there is a link for that group in the show notes. So yeah, and I'm not going to be in there all the time. I'll check it out and I'll lurk around and post stuff every once in a while, but yeah, just keep it solutionary, guys. And if you're posting every 5 minutes, I'm probably gonna put some restrictions on you. You can restrict people from how often they can post, but I trust you guys to keep it solutionary, keep it positive, and that's what we should do in there. So guys, we are for now a value for value show. We have had a sponsorship inquiry, so that might be coming soon. We'll see. But for now, we're just value for value, and I've gotten some good donations about last few weeks. Linnea, Cody, William, Forrest, Sean, Chris, thank you guys all for the donations. Guys, if I'm leaving you out, shoot me a quick message and I'll shout you out on the next show. Sorry, I've just been overwhelmed with a lot of stuff. And our friend Matt Pierce, who is in New Hampshire, sent me out a bunch of spice blends that he's making. And I think it's called Granite State Spice Blends. But he's a really good guy. And thank you, Matt, for those. Let's see. Guys, we got some merch. We have a Teespring store. There's a link in the show notes. And I think on our Instagram, there's also a link to it. Get in there. We got some Tartaria shirts. And we've got the Deborah Gets Red Pilled pill bottle shirt. I guess Buffalo Rambler from False Reality Check wore it down to a tinfoil hat comedy night down in Southern California. And I guess Eddie Bravo loved the shirt, took pictures of it. It was really cool to see those guys repping our shit at the show. And they said they got a bunch of interaction from the crowd who knew who we were. So that's awesome. Thanks, guys. And hopefully we get to get those guys back on the show soon. They're great. They're blowing up. They're going to be huge. They're just having fun, interesting conversations with people. And I think that's really resonating with people right now, because most people can't civilly talk with each other anymore. All right, guys, that's the news. And so we are going to get into kind of my thoughts on the last episode, how it came about. And yeah, it was tough. I knew it was going to be a rough one. After the Klaus Schwab Jr. episode, you know, Deborah had said some things in the intro, like that she thought a good solution to my company mandating vaccines and me not wanting to get one, what I should do was to get vaccinated. And, you know, that made a lot of people really, really mad. And then she talked about some Gavin Newsom stuff. He's still in power, I guess. The world is fucking crazy, guys. I don't know what the fuck's going on. The drummer for my favorite band, my favorite oi band, who sing about drinking and street violence and all this stuff for the last 30 years, is pushing mask mandates, pushing the vaccine, celebrating people with different political beliefs as him being shot at the Capitol building. And Nicki Minaj is the most based motherfucker in the world right now. What the fuck's going on? I guess it comes down to that Nicki Minaj is, what, how does the saying go? Not the hero we deserve, but the hero we got. Who would have known? But who knows? Maybe I'm a fan now. I really, she's going full Kanye. Maybe she saw a gap in the market for the female Kanye. So Nicki Minaj, I guess thanks for what you're doing. And she has something like 2 million Twitter followers. She got kicked off Twitter for saying that, you know, people need to think before they get a vaccine, which I guess is medical misinformation. So she took to her Instagram account that has 22 million followers, probably a lot of young people too. So, hey, we'll take it any way we can get it. But yeah, back to the show. Oh God, guys, it was rough. After the show, we went up to Tacoma, watched Eddie Bravo and Sam Tripoli do stand up. Wasn't the best time I've been. I've been to about 5 of them, I think, and this one probably was the least funny. The crowd was a bit off. I think people just don't know how to act in public anymore. But it was cool to see. We got up to Tacoma Comedy Club. There's a mask mandate in Washington. I went into the club without a mask. Security guy tells me I need to wear a mask. I'm like, I don't have one. Do you guys have one? They make me pay $1 for a fucking mask that says right on the box isn't for medical purposes. It doesn't protect against coronavirus. Put it on my chin, walk to the table without even putting it on. And yeah, as soon as we get there, take it off. Nobody's wearing them throughout the whole place. Place is full capacity for what they're allowing in, but not like the real full capacity. So it's not that full. But nobody's wearing masks. Everybody's walking to the bathroom. Show's all right. You know, Eddie Bravo went way over, so Sam didn't get to do much comedy. But it was fun. Got to take pictures with those guys afterwards. Got a shirt, the Shapeshifting Jesus shirt, which is awesome. And I'll always support those guys, so you should too. But it was great because after the show, you know, there's everybody at the show is waiting in line to take pictures and talk to those guys, and nobody's wearing a mask. And the staff wasn't even sweating it, you know, because there's probably 100 people not wearing masks, you know. There's nothing they can do about it. So it was just like a nice reminder that just non-compliance, massive non-compliance is something that works, you know. Yeah, it was we re-listened to the show on the way up to the comedy show, and yeah, it was tough. I didn't know what to expect from people listening to it. I knew it was gonna set off some alarms for people, and but you know, I thought from what I got from the episode was that Deborah is not as far down the road as I thought she was. I thought that she was going to be, you know, at least when I see a news story that's like interesting to me, I stop and I think about 8 steps down the road of why this is happening. The first thought in my brain that goes through is, well, this is probably a lie, at least in a little bit of the story is probably untrue. And she's still not doing that. And, you know, I started this show to try to expose her to some of the stuff that I've been exposed to that makes sense to me and it's shaped my worldview. And I think in the process of that, you know, I still wanted to do stuff on this show that was entertaining for me. So I mean, kind of turned it into this guest show, one topic show, where I would get a guest on and just learn about stuff or try to teach her about stuff. I figured if we started real basic, broke down the media, got into some pedophile scandals, that would just set the stage. And from there on out, she would be wide open to see the world as it was. And it was not the case. We're a year in, and I realized that learning about the Nephilim or, you know, satanic ritual abuse or the moon landing, all this stuff in my brain, when I hear about it, it opens the world up to me and makes me feel that there's something else going on out there. And to her, I think it was just kind of wacky stuff. And then the medical stuff, I don't understand. It's just so hard. I'm getting frustrated again. It's just so crazy that people don't see the world in the same way that you do. And I can't expect people to, because I'm a fucking weirdo. But yeah, it made me realize that the show might need to go in a little bit of a different direction. So, but guys, Deborah is as kind of a person as there is. She's full on a boomer. And the boomers are the generation, I believe, that have had the largest psyop run on them in the history of the world. I kind of wanted to get into this, the psyop of the boomer. And I wanted to do an episode with Dean Reiner, and I talked to him about it. And he's like, dude, that is way too big, way too broad. He's all about, you know, getting clips, proven stuff, coming up with a coherent argument about it, where I would just like want to just get in and start talking about it. And I was like, oh, you have a whole process that involves research and finding interviews and sound bites and stuff. I was like, okay, thanks Dean, because I would have just tried to jump in and it's way too big of a case to prove. But what I've got is, you know, and some of you guys wrote emails about it, like, boom, these people that were born, you know, post-World War II America, they were born into this just lie of American exceptionalism and prosperity. Their fathers all came back. They moved to the suburbs out of cities with the GI Bill. Money was cheap and easy. They're traumatized with the assassination of Kennedy, lied to on the massive scale about that. And then following that, the moon landing, which just propped up this idea of America's the best, we're the greatest thing in the world after we beat Russia to the moon or whatever. In my opinion, we didn't go. You know, into the 70s. Oh, and then they're able to use, you know, the 60s, late 60s, Summer of Love as this large scale cultural event that allowed them to insert this moral superiority over others. And I think they held on to that feeling that they were the generation of love and against the war and trying to change the world. And they held on to that into the 80s when they all became yuppies under Reagan, when money was cheap and free and easy. And if you had a college degree, you could become really rich really easily. You know, you could be a checker at Safeway and go buy a 3-bedroom house and put your 2 kids through college. And, you know, the world that, all the while keeping, while holding on to this feeling of, you know, we're the right, we're doing it right. It's like what Deborah always talks about, like, oh, I'm a Democrat, you know, we're the party of anti-war love, you know, let's take care of our fellow man and those who are less fortunate than us. And it's, you know, now they're the party of, racism in a hidden form and wars, and but it's just this massive appeal to authority that all this whole generation has that I can't, it's so frustrating. And I know everybody that listens to the show loves this show because I'm talking to their mom for them in their head, kind of. And it's, you know, I'd like to get into it a little bit more, a lot more, and we're going to do that. But kind of lost my train of thought here, but that's kind of just this whole thing with the boomers and Deborah's, you know, she can't seem to break out of it. But she is a good person. And I know, you know, certain things from the interview really upset people, like when I asked her how her friends stationery business was doing amidst all the lockdown and stuff, and she kind of scoffed and said it's actually doing really well. I know that I got emails that upset people. She explained it's because she lives in a affluent area in a bubble of wealth and prosperity, and I suspect that her friend is using this stationery shop to spend her husband's money. And that even if there was nobody going into the store, that it would be able to stay open. That's just me speculating, but that's probably how it is. I think it'd probably be pretty hard to maintain an open business selling stationery when nobody is leaving their house. People are leaving their house now, but this business started when nobody was. All speculation though, guys, could be totally off, you know. But last weekend, Deborah was in town. She came up with her husband. They went to a wedding of their other daughter's friend up in Washington. Emily and I were invited to it, but we were subsequently uninvited a while back with no explanation, but we all pretty much know it's because either because of our beliefs on what's going on in the world right now. And also this girl who I've never met before, who invited us to the wedding based on her knowing Emily or something. I don't know. I didn't want to go anyway, but she told Emily's sister that I'm in the Proud Boys. And yeah, so definitely not in the Proud Boys, guys. But, you know, if being Proud Boy adjacent gets me uninvited from shitty weddings, I might just join up. Instead of going to this stupid wedding We drove all the way up to Bellingham, Washington, which is 50 miles south of the Canadian border in Washington, and went to our friend Paul and Lainey's homestead, where they had the greener pastures of Agora. And I met them on through Monica Perez, through a couple of her group Patreon parties. And they're just a really awesome family. They live on their 27-acre family homestead that's been in their Paul's family for well over 100 years. His great-grandfather moved here from Germany, bought it in the early 1900s, and they had just an underground farmer's market. And they were inspired to do it because I had talked about it to Monica on the propaganda report about the ones that I had done last winter. And it's really awesome. You know, after our, at the end of our Idaho road trip, we drove to their homestead without, we'd never met them before, just over the internet. And they let us camp out there. And we really hit it off with them. And this time, this is the second time we've been to their place. We drove up there. It's about 4 hours from where we're at, 3.5. And we were planning on camping. It started raining about 3 p.m. and they invited us into the house and let us sleep inside, which was really nice. You can tell they're private people, and I really respect them because they like totally, the first time we met them, Lainey totally, we could tell she was just kind of vetting us out to make sure we're not creeps or weirdos before, you know, she invited us into the house. And we passed the test this time. We got invited into the house to sleep, and they gave us an open invite to come back whenever we want. And they've got that at our place too. So it was really great to see they'd gone out to some pro-freedom meetings in Bellingham and advertised their market. Monica Perez advertised it for them on the Prop Report, and it was good. There's people there that knew about my show. Had some really awesome conversations with some people there about Howard Mikowski, Howdy Mikowski, who was on the show. People are like, it was funny because people have been at, he was recently on Tinfoil Hat, and he kind of told the same story that he did on our show like 6 months ago. And people are like, man, you need to get Howard Mikowski on. I'm like, hey, guy, go listen back to whatever, you know, episode 40 or whatever it was. And, but talk to some people about Tartaria and just ate a lot of, helped Lainey and Paul barbecue sausage all day. Paul makes this really good sausage, and I think I'm going to start doing it too when we get the house a little more squared away. But yeah, so we got to do that instead of going to some fucking lame wedding where double vaccinated people still wear masks. And so after they were done with the wedding, Deborah and her husband came down and stayed in our little town about a half mile from our house at an Airbnb for a couple days. And we went, when we were coming back from Washington from the Agora, we went and met them in the nearest place, nearest little breakfast restaurant. And, you know, there's mask mandates here in Oregon, but nobody's enforcing it. So we walked right in, sat down. Deborah and Eric arrived shortly thereafter. And, you know, I'd say 75% of the people that are going into this restaurant are wearing masks. And Deborah came in and she was not wearing a mask. And that's a big deal. You know, that's a big deal that she's actually awake on a small scale, and just that little bit of non-compliance out of her is a way bigger deal than it is out of me. So I noticed that right away, and I didn't say anything, but it really warmed my heart and made me feel much better after a week before we had done episode 74, you know. And they came and hung out at the house. We saw Deborah in one of we saw her people pleasing in full effect. It was a little bit sad. I don't really want to get into like what happened, but it was kind of a bummer. It really affected Emily to see it happen, and made her kind of question a lot of stuff about her her life, and if the way that she acts sometimes is a result of different things. So that thing, it's so foreign to me because I don't have codependency or people pleasing issues at all. You know, I at one point my wife, a lot of times, like if it's hard for me to understand the way somebody's feeling, Emily will be like, hey, idiot, like imagine you know what happens when you try to explain your drinking problem to somebody who doesn't have a drinking problem and they're wondering why you can't just have one drink, you know, and go home. And I appreciate that, but at one point she told me that and I was like, about codependency and people pleasing, and I said, trying to understand codependency is like me trying to tell somebody who's never had a drink in their life about alcoholism, because not a casual drinker, but to somebody who's never had one taste of alcohol and doesn't need it. So it's about as foreign as it gets for me. I tend to be pretty confrontational, and I don't care what anybody thinks about me. I don't care if people like me. I don't care. You know, that's why I don't care if I'm ostracized from society, from polite society. That's not something I'm interested in. And I think that's why I'm doing okay with the way the world's going. I feel a really eerie sense of calm and peacefulness right now. And even though the walls are kind of closing in around us, I have, I have faith in something that everything is going to work out exactly how it is, and how it's supposed to. And I think that how it's supposed to is that, you know, I end up leading a good life, no matter how long it goes or when it ends. If I live this life in a manner that I see moral and just, and I'm kind to people, you know, I'll be happy with the way that life goes. I'll segue from that into, you know, just kind of what's going on. Like, my work's been super busy, working 5 12-hour days, you know, so worked 60 hours this last week. The week before this last one, there was a union meeting. I haven't been to a union meeting in 3 years. They're pretty boring. A guy I used to work with called me. He's a Russian Orthodox guy. There's a lot of them here in the Pacific Northwest. Extremely religious slobs. And they are not about this vaccine thing. So I haven't worked with him for a few years. I haven't talked to him in a long time. He called me. I'm working with his little brother right now. He has like 14 siblings, and they're all in the Portland elevator constructors trade. It's crazy. But he called me and he said, hey, my brother Oleg, who's my my apprentice right now, he's like, Oleg told me that you're not about this vaccine thing. There's a bunch of us going to the union meeting tonight to, you know, tell them what's up with this man, you know, this Oregon mandate. And it was the day that Joe Biden came out with the 100-person rule. And so we went to the union meeting, and it was awesome because there's, I think, probably about 3 times as many people as go to a normal union meeting, and they were all there because nobody wants this mandate. And I think more people than I expected are willing to not work if this is the way it's going to go. And, you know, I'm beyond, I've been a union member across three different union locals and two trades. And I've been at it long enough to know that these labor unions don't do fucking shit for us. They're not going to do anything for us. But I think they took a consensus of the crowd. They sent out a letter. We got a letter, and I got a letter in the mail yesterday from the union. They're saying they wrote it up. They said, if you want us to draft a letter on behalf of the union saying that we don't support these mandates, these vaccine mandates, we will do that. We'll get a lawyer on retainer. And so I checked that box. There's a little comment section that you could write a comment. And it just said, I just wrote, you know, I will never put something in my body. I'll never be forced to put something in my body that I don't want. This is the hill I came to die on. That was my message for them. So I'm going to mail that off today. And, but it was great. I'm in the construction department of my trade. So that means I go to new buildings, build new elevators. But there's a whole different section of the trade that's the service department and the repair department. And the service guys go to buildings, you know, where the elevators broke down or there's people stuck in the elevator and get it running again, you know. It's a stressful job, it's a hard job, but they're guys that are really, really smart dudes electrically. And if those guys don't go to work, that'll shut down a metropolitan city. And my company, ThyssenKrupp Elevator, who is you know, a Nazi company, Fritz Thyssen was the founder of the Third Reich, and ThyssenKrupp is the largest producer of steel in Europe, has an elevator division. They're just a massive multi national conglomerate. And most of the guys in our service department out of local 23 Portland are, I think, willing to quit. At least 50% or more of our company, I think, is too. Or not quit, but let them lay us off. The union said that they will, probably the best that they can do is treat it like a drug test, where if you refuse a drug test, there's certain jobs or buildings that you can't work on. So I don't know. That's better than nothing, but we'll see what happens. But yeah, just this whole idea of massive noncompliance and people just refusing, that's what's going to turn this thing around, in my opinion. Later on, or early this last week, my boss, the office boss, the guy who's like the project manager, my superintendent is what they call him, called everybody in the new construction department and asked them if they were vaccinated. Called me. I said, I'm going to decline to answer. And I think they're just trying to kind of get a idea of what's what and what to tell, you know, corporate when they say like, hey, 60% of the company isn't vaccinated and probably at least 75% of those people aren't gonna do it when this mandate comes up. So if anything, if I still, you know, lose my job, I'm okay with it. It was just really nice to go to this union meeting and to talk to people that I haven't talked to in a long time and see guys from my company who aren't all about it. I'm working on a job. It's me, my helper, another mechanic and his helper, and none of us are down for it. You know, I think the other mechanic would probably do it if it came down to it, but me and the other two helpers aren't doing it, you know. So it's just, I think this whole divide and conquer and lock people away from other people so they can't talk and get together and see, like, I would have never expected that so many people in my union were against this. And I went and met with people in person, and it was really uplifting. And I think when people aren't allowed to meet, congregate, and talk and discuss things, that's all by design. That's all part of the big plan. And so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful about life, not about my job. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? You know, I don't know. Maybe they'll say I can take PCR tests twice a week. I don't know if I want to do that either. I got to think that's the, I got to think that over. You know, and I kind of want to just not have to go to work anymore. I kind of want to be out here on my farm doing my thing. But from there, yeah, it's just, it's so crazy, guys. It seems like the world's ending around us, but I can go into town and get a pizza. I can come home and I can watch a movie, and it's just, it's the most American ending of the world as you could hope for, just consumerism in full effect. Oh, it's so strange. I don't get it. I have contemplating this show over the last couple weeks, I've realized more than ever that I don't know anything. Like, I am more confused after a year of heavily looking into every different kind of conspiracy. The only thing that's cemented in my mind is that everything that I'm told is a lie, and that I don't know anything. And I think as long as I have that thought, I'll be able to, you know, grow as a person. But it's like what they say on the Crow 777 song, it's belief is the enemy of knowing. I don't believe anything anymore. We'll give you guys a little bit of homestead news. We got a bid to remodel our house. It was almost double what the designer had kind of ballparked us. What she'd ballparked us was a little bit more than we had in the bank, but we probably could have made work. And then they came back with the actual bid, and it was double. And not like a COVID hospital double, not one to two people in the ICU. It was exponentially larger. You know, we kind of started getting bids on this thing before this Biden mandate came out, and we kind of just are going to put everything on the back burner, maybe do a little bit at a time if we can. But if I go, if I lose my job, it's probably not good to have another $65,000 worth of debt added onto the mortgage. So, I mean, we're just going to do a little bit at a time. I think we're going to get some new windows on the place. We're just going to try to limp through this winter and stay warm in this this broken down little farmhouse. It's totally livable. Bathroom sucks. I want a kitchen. I want a new kitchen. It's hard to cook in there. There's no dishwasher. I didn't have a dishwasher for years and years, so I'm kind of back reconditioned to having one. But even like if we don't, the sink is terrible. It's really shallow. You can't do dishes by hand in there. It's really hard. I want a new, a nicer kitchen. I want to be able to stay healthy this winter. I've been so busy with work. We haven't really done much work on the house I built, or on the land. I built a little addition to the chicken coop. I put four nesting boxes on the back of the chicken coop with a little door on hinges that swings down. And I've got some pictures of that up on the Telegram if you guys go and look in there. Wilma, the pit bull, is a murderer. She killed one of my chickens. And it's a little bit of a bummer, a little bit of a mystery what happened, but I think we figured it out. She has this little area in the tall grass. She found all these marrow bones that the old dog that lived here left behind, and she took them all and put them in this little area, the tall grass out in the pasture. She's super protective over it. I think one day she just goes and she lays over there because nobody can see her. She just chews on these bones. She found a frisbee. She's got all these little treasures that she put over there that she found on the property. And it's pretty cute. But she's a rescue dog who lived on the streets of deep East Oakland. And there's some stuff that's inside of her little brain and psyche that's never going to leave from those times. As much progress as she's made, she still does what they call resource guarding, because she came from a spot where she didn't know if she was going to have more food ever again. So she drinks water. If there's water out, she'll drink way more water than she needs. She's extremely protective over toys, food, and affection as well. But she was overlaying in the grass from what we deduced. And one of the chickens just wandered over there, and she roughed it up. I don't think she was trying to kill it, but I heard like this loud chicken squawking. I was inside and I was like, oh, she's probably just chasing them around or something. And then I, about an hour, 30 minutes later, so I looked out the window and I saw her kind of like pawing something gently. And I was like, oh no, that's probably a chicken. I went out there and there was a chicken, and it was, she was laying in the grass, still moving around a little bit. So I don't know if she was dead. They still blink for a long time after they're dead. So I hope she was dead so she didn't have to suffer, but I picked her up by the neck and, I wrung her neck and she died. She closed her eyes right away. She looked super peaceful. It was pretty sad. And, but Wilma, like, she didn't, you know, chew her up or try to eat her or anything. I think she was just trying to protect her stuff. And I don't think she meant to kill her, but she's pretty strong. And, you know, those chickens are pretty delicate. So, you know, she didn't get in trouble or anything, but she knew that she did something wrong. When I went out there, she, like, immediately walked away and, like, laid down and showed her belly, which she does when she knows she's in trouble. But yeah, that was sad, but you know, I think we kind of learned. I'm going to fence in the chickens a little bit better and I'll put an electrical fence around their area. There's been some massive coyote activity on the property. Wilma was tracking one the other day. Emily got a picture of it on her phone, and at nighttime they've just been going crazy. They howl and they make these little yipping noises. And I woke up in the middle of the night the other night, and it was close. It was close to the house. So we got to keep an eye out for them, make sure Tweety doesn't get snatched up and eaten. But I think as long as Wilma and Leroy kind of protect her and or protect him and make sure he's okay. Okay, guys, sorry about the suspense. I know that I've been teasing out that the show has got some big news. So, you know, this is all coming from my reflections of episode 74. And like I said, you know, Deborah learning about Flat Earth and, you know, whatever crazy other conspiracy, Antarctica, Operation High Jump isn't doing the trick. So what we're going to do is, I hope everybody likes this. I am going to keep the Deborah Gets Red Pilled RSS feed. So you will not need to resubscribe to any new shows. I'm going to break Deborah Gets Red Pilled into 3 different shows, all under the Deborah Gets Red Pilled banner, but with different sub names. I'm going to do a homestead show with Emily, where we just kind of talk about the progress of the homestead, what we're doing with our land, and just the progress of how it's coming, things that we learned. And we'll maybe have some guests on to talk about their journeys as well. But yeah, I don't know if we call it a homestead show or a self-sufficiency show. We want you guys to get out there and take action and do things for yourself that are going to help you to get out of the matrix. And it's going to be everything from going out to buying land like we did. And there's going to be things in there that you can do if you live in an apartment with a tiny little kitchen or a little balcony where you could grow food or something like that. But we'd really like to do that. So that's going to be one show. We're going to have little titles for each of these shows too. Second show. I love conspiracies. That's why I started this podcast. I want to hear about all the weird shit. It's been kind of hard to do the weird stuff with Deborah, just because she goes in cold, not knowing anything about it. And I know I always know at least a little bit about what's going on and always have like a idea of my opinion on the subject before I go in. And when I'm with her interviewing somebody that's going into all this weird stuff, it's a hard interview to do because I have to take into account what she's trying to figure out and keep her involved. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I used to go to like these really, really violent punk rock shows when I was younger. And they were usually pretty fun. But there's always trouble that would happen. And, you know, you could get yourself into a sticky situation if you just accidentally said the wrong thing to the wrong kind of person at the wrong time. And I had, every once in a while, I'd have like a normie friend, or I'd have like my brother-in-law who would want to go to a show with me or something. And they'd tag along, and I'd always kind of have to keep an eye out on them to make sure that they don't get there. Didn't get their heads kicked in or something like that, because it was always a possibility. And that's kind of how I feel when I'm talking to somebody about this crazy conspiracy stuff and trying to keep an eye out for Deborah, you know. So I reached out to my friend Paul, who has the homestead that I went to up in Washington. Last week, we had a fantastic hangout session after dinner, just talking about everything from liberty to psyops to the shape of the earth to Tartaria. And, you know, him and I are on the same page and interested in all this stuff and willing to have an open mind about every single thing. And I think what him and I have both come to the conclusion is that we don't know anything. We don't believe anything. So I reached out to him and asked him if he wanted to do the conspiracy show with me, and he was super stoked. He said yeah, he's in. So we're gonna do that one, me and him, and we'll do the thing where we get guests and we'll go deep, homeboy. And yeah, that's gonna be super fun. We're gonna do everything. He's really into Tartaria. And so I think, well, I don't know if he's super into it, but he's really interested in it. And that's my favorite thing. So we're going to do that. And then the third and final show, guys, is just going to be Deborah and I one-on-one, maybe a guest every once in a while, if I can get like a doctor or a lawyer or something like that on some important topic that isn't esoteric or mystical or something like that. You know, I mean, I know all that stuff's important, but she's not there yet. I kind of want to do, I know I get a lot of emails about people who love the solo shows that Deborah and I do every once in a while, and people like our intros. So I just kind of want to do like our intro, her and I talking maybe about some current events. I'm going to keep it way more non-confrontational. within episode 74. We're going to try to leave every episode, you know, happy, positive. Maybe we learned something, maybe we didn't. But yeah, it's going to be her and I one-on-one doing our intros, but for, you know, 45 minutes, an hour. And, I think that's how the show's going to go. I mean, I'm not getting rich off the show. I make about, I mean, full disclosure, guys, I get about $100 a month from donations. You know, that's pretty much breaking even on what I have to pay for bandwidth and Zoom and all this stuff. So, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, but I'm not getting rich off the show. So I figure I might as well do put out content that interests me. I'm the boss of this show. I'm so amazed that people want to tune in to hear anything that I have to say. But I think as long as I'm putting out content that interests me, I think it'll remain interesting. And hopefully you guys will stick around for this journey and this new leg of the show. I think it's going to be good. And I think, Deborah will grow from this, exponentially more than she would if, you know, she learns about, you know, the Bermuda Triangle or something like that. So I'd really like you guys to join the Telegram and to send me emails and to let me know what you think about this new journey that we're about to embark on. Like I said, the download numbers have been amazing. We got the most downloads in a week after episode 74, 5,500, which is a lot for a show our size. This last week, you know, I haven't put out any content in a while. Last week, we didn't even put out a show and I got 2,500 downloads. So that means people, new people are finding the show and going back and listening to old episodes, which is amazing. I got 2,500 episodes or 2,500 downloads on a week when I didn't put out an episode. That is really, really cool to hear. And that's the deduction that I can make from that is that, yeah, new listeners are going back and listening to old shows. So, it's going to be a process to figure out how we're going to do all these three shows. I don't know if we're going to be like on a do one show a week and just rotate it. I'd like to get back up to two shows a week, how it was before, but that's not possible right now because my work schedule. But hey, who knows? I might have 7 days a week off pretty soon. So yeah, like I said, I hope you guys come along with me on this thing. Get in that Telegram channel and let me know what you think. And yeah, I just I'm really excited. I'm really excited about the world right now. I've got this strange sense of peace and calm and excitement. I'm built for this shit. Like this, the way that the world's going, it's not the best. Could be better. Be awesome if it was 2014 again, but it's not, guys. And I think I'm here to just get through it and help guide other people through it. I know it's gonna be hard and I know we're gonna win, but it's gonna get rough. And who knows? It might have already started. I'm saying this is the calm before the storm. We might be right in the middle of the storm right now. And I'm not talking about the Q storm. Sorry, I probably shouldn't use that language. But wow, I was worried about being able to do an episode by myself. I've gone a whole hour. I don't know if I left anything else out. Let me look. I made some notes. Yeah, like I said, vote with your money, mass non-compliance. Go out and enjoy that pizza while you can, guys, because, who knows when Domino's isn't going to be open anymore. Domino's is probably going to be open forever. Who knows when that pizza shop that's actually good down the street from your house isn't going to be open. Yeah, get ready, guys. Talk to your friends. Talk to your family. get out there, interact one-on-one in groups, everything. Yeah. Once you get out there and talk to people, there's more people like us than you expect. And, you know, not everybody's going to be a perfect ally, but anybody who's opposing these vaccination passports and all this stuff that's coming down the line has got to be our ally right now, whether it be Nicki Minaj or the Black Muslims or Mormons or conservative neocons. I don't care. This is the issue right now for us, for me at least. You know, get out there, and there's groups for everybody out there. There's people everywhere, every state, every city opposing this stuff. You just got to get out there and find it. And if you can't, start it up. Guys, I love you. Thanks for tuning in. Get in that Telegram group. Send me emails. Tell me what you think. If this is a terrible idea, if it's a great idea, if you've got any suggestions to make it even better, let me know. I love you all. I might be back tomorrow with another episode. Who knows? We'll be back next Sunday for sure with Deborah, with our, it'll be the last time that we ever had a scheduled guest for Deborah and I. It's going to be a good one. Buck Johnson from the Counterflow podcast. So guys, I've said I love you 8 times. I'm going to say it again. I love you all. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being part of my life and part of this process. We will be back soon. We'll talk to you soon. Get at us. Get at everybody else. Get in that Telegram group. Meet people in your area and meet up. All right. Goodbye. I love you.